Anybody that wants copies of the slides, there's a QR code over there, so you can download copies of the slides if people want to follow through or just take them with you. So I'm going to talk about psychoneuroimmunology. Is it the next big thing in mind-body medicine? People that, if you've seen me before, a lot of people know me as the cancer guy in the UK. I do a lot of hospital work working with cancer. And do a lot of training around the world on that particular topic. And people that haven't seen me before, I'm actually, due to cancellations of people, I'm actually doing my hypno-oncology talk tomorrow at the same time. But today we're going to talk about psychoneuroimmunology. Is it the next big thing in mind-body medicine? I'll give you a bit about my background. Why am I talking about this? I'm a full-time hypnotherapist. I've been full-time for nearly 20 years. I'm one of the few people in the UK with a master's degree in clinical hypnosis. I did some groundbreaking research in the UK where I did a study into pre-surgical hypnosis and the effects that had on the recovery quality in breast cancer operations. And I was able to demonstrate that it did and how and why. And it's not due to my research, but now in the UK we have the Royal College of Anaesthetists now actually recommend pre-surgical hypnosis, which is good. They don't call it hypnosis, unfortunately, but we're getting there. I work one day a week in an oncology unit, and I've worked with several thousand cancer patients. I'm also in the UK, although it's not regulated, hypnosis isn't regulated in the UK. We do have voluntary regulation now. The Department of Health set up the Complementary and Natural Healthcare Council, and they regulate it. They have a national curriculum, ethics, and so on and so forth. And I'm actually on their board, so I actually helped design the national curriculum for training in the UK. It's now recognised by the General Medical Council. So if you are voluntary regulated, you can technically be referred to by GPs in the UK. In reality, it doesn't happen. Because in the UK we have the NHS, which and they won't actually fund anything. So the doctors have to pay out of their budget, and as you can imagine, that's very unlikely to happen. But at least we are getting there. So some things are happening, and I really want hypnotherapy to be taken more seriously by the medical fraternity and so on. So we're going to talk about the immune system as an intro to psychoneuroimmunology, and I'm going to start calling it PNI for short. Because a lot of people, if you start saying psychoneuroimmunology too many times, your tongue and your teeth start falling over it. And so we'll call it PNI for short. So we know the immune system, it's of vital importance for our health and well-being. It protects us from anything that doesn't belong, things like bacteria, viruses, toxins, cancerous cells. And it's made up of organs and tissues. It includes your spleen, your appendix, your tonsils, your thymus, bone marrow, lymph nodes, amongst other things. So... PNI, psychoneuroimmunology. Can we really alter the immune system using the power of the mind? Sounds mind-boggling, doesn't it? Almost impossible. But just imagine if we could. What amazing breakthroughs there could be in areas such as HIV, cancer, autoimmune disorders, and a multitude of other things. People, however, still find it a difficult concept to grasp, to get their heads around. So we're going to start with an analogy, which hopefully will be more familiar to hypnotherapy practitioners. Now, a lot of you, as I do, work with unexplained infertility. There's a lot of research, particularly from Israel, about unexplained infertility and IVF and so on, that does demonstrate that hypnosis works very well for it. Certainly with my unexplained infertility, about 50% of patients that I've worked with have gone on to have children, which is great. But one of the reasons behind unexplained infertility, one of the things that happens is if somebody's trying to get pregnant and it's not happening, they become anxious. When they become anxious, estrogen production actually decreases in the hormonal system. It's also believed that if they then go from anxiety to depression, that actually increases prolactin. And prolactin is actually produced during lactation, and it stops them actually becoming pregnant because they're breastfeeding. So therefore, the mind is now affecting the body to stop them becoming pregnant. So by using talking therapies, such as hypnosis, we can deal with depression and anxiety, so we can rebalance the hormonal system. And that's been demonstrated and proven scientifically. So that's an analogy. So in the same way, is it not possible that talking therapies, because we know that we can change feelings and emotions, we can have an impact on the immune system as well? So PNI, It's the study of the effect of mind on health and resistance to disease. It's the study of the interaction between psychological processes and the nervous and immune systems of the human body. It's a new field of study. If it's saying new, it sort of goes back really to the 70s. And it looks at the interaction between your central nervous system and your immune system. And researchers know that central nervous system and immune system communicate with each other. They don't really understand how. It's only recently they've started to understand how. But we know that the nerves in the brain and spinal cord make up the central nervous system. And the immune system is made up of organs and cells that defend the body against infection. Both systems produce molecules and proteins, and they act as messengers between the two systems. If you like, they are hormones, neurotransmitters, and so on. And there's things that, if anybody saw Jeff's talk yesterday, we're talking about things called cytokines and leukocytes, which actually are communicators with the central nervous system. And we'll talk a little bit about those later. So PNI was attributed to Dr. Robert Ader, really started it in the mid-70s. Now, it shows how Google is prevalent today, because in lots of text you'll see it changed as Robert Adler. So it's just people have obviously just mindlessly copied and pasted, but it is actually Ader. He published a lot of papers on the subject. Many of them he had an assistant or a cohort, Nicholas Cohen. And they got together in 1974, and they published loads of papers up into the 2000s until Robert Ader passed away in New York in 2011. And PNI investigates how stressful situations and negative feelings associated with them can cause changes in the body, more particularly in the immune system. Now, there's a growing body of evidence on the interaction between the immune system, the endocrine system, the nervous system, and psychological factors. And it's been suggested that there's enough evidence available that hypnosis can modify the production and activity of components of the immune system, and therefore the immune response, which has great things going forward. And that was actually a piece of research by Griselier in 2002, that they showed that hypnosis can affect B cells, T cells, and helper cells actually in the blood, and also suppressor cells. But let's go back a very brief history. If we go back even as far as the 2nd century, Roman physicians suspected links between depressed states of mind and cancer. And in the early 1900s, there was Walter Cannon, a professor of physiology at Harvard. He observed that the changes in emotional states in animals, such as anxiety, distress, or rage, affected the movements of the stomach, so they were eating less. And these studies looked into the relationship between the effects of emotions and perceptions on the autonomic nervous system, mainly the sympathetic and parasympathetic responses that we recognise as the freeze, fight and flight responses. His findings were published, and eventually it came up in book form in 1911, The Mechanical Factors of Digestion. But then in the 20th century, pharmacology and surgery become all the rage, and psychology seemed to be slightly ignored. In the mid-70s, Robert Ader and Nicholas Cohen, they were at the University of Rochester, they advanced PNI with a demonstration of classic conditioning of immune function. Now, I don't know quite how they come up with their idea of what they were going to do, but it was, if you like, sort of based on the Pavlov idea of ringing the bell for dogs. But what they actually did was they conditioned rats in a laboratory, and they had saccharine-laced water, so sweet water, and they put a drug in it, which caused nausea and taste aversion. And that, therefore, it suppressed the immune system. And they discovered that, obviously, when they gave this to the rats, they were sick, nauseous, they wouldn't eat, and so on. That changed the immune system. But they then found that even once they started taking the drug out again, by giving them the water, it was almost auto-suggestion. The rats still had the same problems with the immune system, despite not having the drugs. So therefore, they decided that it was the response of the mind in the rats that they believed that they'd now been poisoned with this particular drug, and therefore it affected the immune system. So they decided that was an experiment, how the nervous system can affect the immune system. So it's done in suggestion, even in rats. In the 70s, there was another research, Hugo Besadovsky and Adriana Del Rey, They were in Switzerland, and they found communications, multi-directional communications, that the brain not, that shows not only the brain can influence immune processes, but also the immune response itself can affect the brain in the other way. And they found that things like antigens and so on can trigger the responses in the mind, and that in turn changes things like regulation of the immune system, immunoglobulin and stuff like that. So they decided that the immune system is also a sensorial receptor organ. So it, besides its sort of effects, it communicates with the brain and all sorts of other structures in the body. And they also identified products from the immune cells, and we call those cytokines, which we'll talk about in a little while, and they mediate the immune-brain communication. And in 81, David Felton, working in Indiana University, discovered a network of cells leading to blood vessels as well as cells of the immune system. And they found that there were nerves in the thymus and the spleen, and they terminated near clusters of lymphocytes and things called macrophages and mast cells, and they discovered that that was the first indication of communication from the immune system and the brain interaction. And Ada and Cohen, they went on to do a groundbreaking book called Psychoneuroimmunology in 1981, which led to the underlying premise that the brain and the immune system actually represents a single integrated system of defence. So Dr. Ada, he spent his entire career as a professor of psychiatry and psychology at University of Rochester, and he did all the original experiments, and he coined the name psychoneuroimmunology. His research in the 70s became a touchstone for studies that have since mapped communication and network between immune cells, hormones and neurotransmitters, and it introduced a whole new field of research that nailed down the science behind notions once considered magical thinking, that, for example, meditation helps reduce arterial plaque, that social bonds improve cancer survival, people under stress catch more colds, and that placebos work not only on the human mind, but also in sentient cells. And at the core of Dr. Ada's breakthrough research, which was an insight probably already obvious to any grandmother in the world, whoever said, stop worrying or you'll make yourself sick. And that's true. And he demonstrated scientifically that stress worsens illness, sometimes even triggering it, and that reducing stress is essential to healthcare. And again, anybody that saw Jeff's talk on DNA being affected by stress yesterday would have had a good introduction to that. So we look at some of the principal players in the immune system. We've got leukocytes. They're white blood cells. There are many types, and they have a variety of functions. They're important to the immune system. They have things called T lymphocytes, cytotic T cells, helper T cells, and lymphocytes. Immunoglobulin is a type of protein. So we have called IG. It's a type of protein that acts as an antibody, and there's lots of different classes of them. So cytokines is a small protein, and it's released by cells, especially those that are in the immune system, and they aid cell-to-cell communication. There are many types of cytokines, but the ones that are generally stimulated by stress are called pro-inflammatory cytokines. And again, Jeff talked about those yesterday. Because under normal circumstances, your body releases pro-inflammatory cytokines in response to infections or injury to help destroy germs or repair tissues. But also when you're physically or emotionally stressed, your body also releases certain things, including adrenaline, and that has an effect on the cytokines, and they bind to specific receptors, and then that causes the pro-inflammatory cytokines, which can then cause problems to you long-term in the body, and that's believed to be sort of incidences of cancer and other sort of things like that. We mentioned yesterday in Jeff's talk things like interleukin-6 and things like that, which actually can technically cause stress in the brain and various other parts of the body. So, stress, hormones, and inflammation. So going back onto that, we have the pro-inflammatory cytokines, interleukins. They're secreted by circulating immune cells called macrophages. They're in white blood cells, and it sort of engulfs cellular debris. We have glial cells. That looks after things like temperature and fluid balance in your body. And we have microglia, and that's in the CNS, and that does what we call homeostasis, which again is regulation of everything in the immune system. And it looks at things like body temperature and amongst other things. And there's quite a lot of research going on in the treatment of anxiety-related disorders in that area. So cytokines are mediators between the system, and again, they go both ways, which is interesting. And there's a number of groups of cytokines, and they're all to do with regulation of pain and response to pain and inflammation. Interleukin 6, as we mentioned, that looks after fever and stress and inflammation and so on. IL-2 looks at white blood cell activity for immunity. And there's also something called a tumor necrosis factor, which causes cell death. And it's actually been implicated in tumor sort of regression going forward. And it's believed that it's linked with IL-1, which is for fever and inflammation, and can have a lot of problems with stress hormones. And it's also believed that it can actually promote cancer in certain situations. So researchers are investigating whether some cases of psychosis can actually be caused by changes in antibodies. There was recent research at Oxford University, and they looked at people that have antibodies in the blood causing symptoms of psychosis. They looked at 228 patients that had psychotic episodes, and it was only 3%, it was a small percentage, had certain antibodies and proteins that caused electrical brain impulses responsible for perceptions of reality. Now, it's a low amount, but they did seem that it was a small group. They had immunotherapy, which is normally a cancer treatment, and that was changing plasma, blood, and so on. So it caused the antibodies to be flushed out of the blood and replaced with good antibodies, and steroids were given, and they found that 8 out of 9 actually made a dramatic improvement from the psychotic episodes. So something worth looking at. Now, a problem we have with inflammation is it does harm tissue, and we have the body sort of fighting against it, which is a bit of an issue. We have the stress hormone cortisol. It has many roles within the body, such as controlling body sugar levels, regulates metabolism, helps reduce inflammation, assists with memory formulation, and is involved with blood pressure and salt and water balance. And not only does it act directly when it's released, but it also makes adrenaline more effective in the muscles. And again, it's involved heavily in the fight and flight response. So we found that chronic inflammation, as we mentioned, caused by lifestyle factors, perhaps as stress, poor diet, that keeps cortisol levels soaring and can wreak havoc in the immune system. So stress and colds. Cohen, which was Ada's sort of cohort, sort of assistant, in 1991, he did a really controlled analysis in this area. And again, probably something that everybody knows, that they concluded that there is a direct and reproducible relationship between stress and infections, such as colds. That's why, you know, people say, oh, you're down, if you're depressed, you're down, you might be prone to something. But we can move on to more sort of complicated stuff. And this was, again, looking at hypnosis. And there was a study that tested the effects of hypnosis on the immune response. They looked at both high and low hypnotizable subjects. And they were exposed to hypnosis, relaxation, or control conditions. And they did blood samples before and after treatment. And the blood tests showed that hypnosis could alter the amount and the response of certain immune cells, such as B cells, helper cells. But interestingly, that it was only in highly hypnotizable subjects, what they actually found at the time. That was actually changed later. Because they found that that using hypnosis you could actually modulate T-cell responses. And again, that could aid in maintenance of health as well as treatment of disease states. And they actually looked at 14 research papers as well, looking at hypnosis or closely related interventions such as relaxation with guided imagery. And they found that it has had a big effect on the production of T-cells. Now, they did say that the role of hypnotizability was a big important factor in their original search. But that's been thrown out the window since then. There was other research by Hall in 82 and 83 that found that they could totally change the amount of T cells in the body But again, they said it was only with high hypnotizable people. But there was more research in 1995 by Ruzaila Smith that showed that they could actually do it with everybody, both high and low hypnotizable subjects. And they looked at control subjects who were exposed to relaxation suggestion, and they decided that the hypnosis appears to be associated with immune responses and had a much better impact compared with relaxation and just suggestion alone. And one of the interesting pieces of research that Taylor did in 1995 found that progressive muscle relaxation and hypnosis and meditation actually reduced increases in T cells in HIV positive people. So it had a positive effect on HIV, which again could have profound implications going forward. Another piece of research was self-hypnosis demonstrated influence in the immune system during exam time. Now, this was carried out on medical students, and they were taught to use imagery to enhance the immune system. And imagery seemed to improve the cells better than relaxation stuff. There was a control group, and this was done in 2003, and it was carried out during exam time, so a very stressful period, and it was carried out on medical students, and probably due to ethics provisions, because my own research had lots of ethics issues, so you'll find that most research seems to be done on students in university, because it's far easier to get the ethics covered. But they did find that taking blood tests from them, the actual doing hypnosis with them, alleviated the stress, and it changed the immune system, which became deregulated because of the stress. Another interesting one, hay fever. There was a randomised control study, and they looked at this, and they found that self-hypnosis outperformed anti-allergic therapies and was shown to be effective, as effective as hay fever medication when dealing with it. But what they also found, they looked at teaching self-hypnosis, and they followed up 2 years later, and they found that self-hypnosis gave the same response 2 years further on, the same as the anti-allergic therapies. So again, something technically we can help with hay fever, doing just hypnosis, despite what people say, oh, you know, you can't do things like that with talking therapies. The evidence seems to be there to support it that we can.
Yeah. The first practice I did when I was taking hypnotherapy courses was to work on allergies, and mm-hmm. completely gone. For
yeah.
Years.
There you go. Yeah. So the evidence.
Let's try this.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So the evidence is there, and you've experienced it, which is great. So, stress-related. Let's move that one. We've done that one. Subsequent autoimmune diseases. There's research carried out in Sweden, and they did a cohort of 1 million people over a 30-year period, and they indicated that exposure to stress-related disorders actually increased autoimmune disease. And one of the actual things that they also found there was very high stressful events, was they also found there that, for example, somebody whose partner, husband or wife had died, they found that it increased the incidence of the partner dying within a short space of time, because they demonstrated that things like those types of events really affected the immune system badly, down-regulated hugely. So that was going on that again, you know, theories that stressful events can introduce sympathetic nervous system endocrine changes and compromises the immune system. And that was following on from this idea of things like death of a partner could have a big effect. Sufficient data to provide strong evidence that immune system changes caused by psychosocial stressors can lead to actual health changes. And this mainly was infectious diseases and wound healing. They've looked at that and found that it causes huge dysregulation by stress and things going on, stresses in life generally. And again, going back to the all-cause mortality, they've said that the death of a spouse in the month following it, because it was so stressful, it doubled the expected amount of people that died compared to normal. So quite a big impact.
Psychosocial stress.
That would be one psychosocial, if you like, would be the death of a partner, for example. So that would be a very and things like moving house, losing a job, changing jobs, all those types of things that would cause stress, you know, out of the norm, if you like. Okay, even sort of having a bad job, if you like, is still a psychosocial stressor. But it's really the big things like, yeah, moving house, losing jobs, losing a partner, divorce, all those types of things. Now, one of my main areas that I look at is hypno-oncology, for people that know me. As I said, I will be talking about hypno-oncology tomorrow, because that's my specialist area. But there's a lot of work actually done in this area with PNI, which is interesting. And again, the potential health consequences are broad, but there's a lot of research being done now that looks at cancer incidence and progression going forward with this. And there's a couple of big pieces of research. One was done by Anderson et al. And they looked at, they put together a biobehavioral model of cancer stress and the disease course. And they said that those experience long-term stressors, things like struggling to cope with going through the cancer journey, worrying about the outcome and things like that, they found that they had high rates of adjustment difficulties, things like depression. And they found that that had... depression, for example, and the stress going through the disease had biological effects and down-regulated the immune system. Now, obviously, if you're fighting a cancer journey, you want the immune system to be as powerful as possible. So if you're stressed and depressed and down-regulating it, then they find that that puts other diseases coming in. For example, they found that down-regulated immune system gave higher rates of respiratory tract infections and other things like that with cancer patients. And they find that, again, there does seem to be evidence that the stress and depression can actually look at, can cause an increase in the disease progression and spread of cancer. So obviously not good. There's a lot of benefits, for example, of now that in hospital of actually looking at emotional distress and things like that, and giving people coping mechanisms, not just hypnotherapy, but giving people coping mechanisms, looking at pain reduction, and just teaching them to have a better psychosocial intervention with people. And they show that if we can give change their health behaviours and compliance to certain treatment, it actually improve the immune system going forward. So they're now looking at that much more sort of broadly, certainly in the UK. They're looking at now that as an intervention target in the medical model. And they still want to broaden the approach, but they decided that really a more holistic approach with better psychosocial support and so on will actually sort of improve people's sort of journey through the cancer journey. It's a long piece of research, but quite interesting if you like that sort of thing. Other areas we looked at, psychoneuroimmunology and cancer, fact and fiction, and also looking at classical condition of immune suppression during chemotherapy. And again, that was almost going back to the rat study, that you can have immune suppression even after chemotherapy, and even talking about having chemotherapy seems to have the same down-regulation of the immune system than actually having the chemotherapy itself does. So that's an interesting one, again, showing the psychological aspects of it. There's a lot of evidence that from healthy populations as well as cancer-linked people that psychological stress does downgrade the immune system. And there are two important things with cancer people. With distress and depression, it actually seems to have a poorer repair of the damaged DNA and alterations to the normal death of cells, which again... means that the cancer will spread quicker and faster and so on. And again, the study suggested that if we can change behavioural factors and psychological factors and enhance sort of communication with people, compliance with people, teaching them coping mechanisms, then it actually does affect the immune system and the incidence and even the spread of cancer. So again, that can have interesting stuff going forward. Further research, there was another piece of research on psychoneuroimmunology and cancer, and they were said that there was a lot of evidence linking psychological stress with cancer formation. So again, that's something that's going to get looked at going forward. And they've actually worked out also for a coping mechanism. They put together a 6-week sort of group intervention, and that consists of health education, problem solving skills, stress management techniques such as hypnosis and relaxation and so on. And they found that that reduced the distress and it had a profound change on the immune system going forward. So again, these are other areas that are now being looked at going forward more thoroughly. So that's enough on cancer. Let's move on to genital infections. So something completely, some light relief. There was an area of this is HPV, human papillomavirus. It's commonly sexual transmitted disease, a genital infection, and it can in fact lead to cancer. I do a monthly mentoring thing, and one of my guests recently was a hypnotherapist that had actually had HPV, which caused throat cancer, and discussed her journey, which was interesting. But they found that in 1996, this piece of research by Barabas, they compared hypnosis treatments with medical therapy and showed that both approaches showed patient improvement going forward. Now, interesting, at the three-month stage, total clearance of HPV were overwhelmingly in favour of hypnotherapy by a factor of 5 to 1, which was interesting. So 5 times more effective than the HPV drugs themselves.
Here in the United States, probably, maybe 4 to 6 years ago in that window of time, parents were beginning to be urged to get their children vaccinated against HPV, age group about 9 or 12 when they start to be...
Yeah, it's common in the UK. It's common in the UK now as well, yeah.
That was my question. Are they doing this in
the UK as well? Yeah, yeah. I think it's probably worldwide, but I can't guarantee that, but certainly yes, it's now a thing for it's teenagers in the UK.
Yes.
Rather than that young, but yeah, it's a common thing now.
Right, to the point where I think even if the kids are entering high school, if they review the records and see that it's not been done, then they kind of make it a prerequisite now for the kids.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but yeah, it is common in the UK now. But how does all this sort of thing affect us with hypnotherapists? One of the things there, communication, let's look at this, is, for example, optimism and pessimism. Pessimists are more prone to stress and depression. So a pessimistic mindset can have a detrimental effect on the course of a disease. Outlook and response, for example. You know, pessimism and optimism can be self-fulfilling prophecies, self-fulfilling mindsets, if you like, goal outcomes, moods, behaviours towards the goal, outlook and response. And this is quite interesting, sort of working with cancer patients and things. With optimism and pessimism, obviously the optimists tend to have a better disease course. And we say in hospital, you need to accept the diagnosis, not the prognosis. Because the problem with that is that from somebody in authority, like a surgeon or an oncologist, if you're given a prognosis, that also becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you like. It becomes a suggestion. If you're told you've got 6 months to live, you're going to live 6 months because that's a direct suggestion in the mind, and that will go with it. So really the idea is we say work with the diagnosis because that is based on fact, whereas prognosis is just based on statistics. So we definitely want to get people along that. And belief has a big thing around that as well. But it is interesting that anything like that can be accepted as a suggestion. And we say that diagnosis is a non-variable fact, and prognosis is a variable fact just based on information of others. It can be a direct suggestion if it's given by a professional, and that can cause fear responses, self-fulfilling prophecies and so on can get sort of formed. And that can lead to negative moods, and that further compromises the immune system, which is the last thing we want going forward. So, is hypnotherapy the answer? Well, there's evidence that it certainly could assist. We know that hypnotherapy can reduce stress and anxiety. We've worked with depression and so on, so there's lots of positive effects on that. We know it can rebalance the hormonal system. There is now evidence that it can change the immune system. So it seems reasonable to assume that we can affect the immune system. There seems to be the evidence there. Sort of what sort of things can we do? What techniques can you use? After you do hypnosis, you use your induction deepener. You can teach self-hypnosis, but there's a lot of things you can do. Guided imagery is very good. Get people to imagine what their immune system likes. Use their approach to it. get them to imagine the individual components, the cells that required, whether they're helper cells and so on. Give gratitude. I find that thanking the immune system for all the hard work that it's doing, then encourage cell production and cell efficiency. Get them to go around the body for things like cancer. And again, we have a 1939 Cancer Act in the UK, so it's illegal to give advice on cancer, to treat cancer and so on. But for psychological well-being, we can do a lot of experimental stuff. And I work a lot with patients with doing guided imagery. In fact, in your talk yesterday, one of the things with Pac-Man, is a good approach for sort of eating up cancer cells. Another one that I do is try and get them to imagine the cancer as an overlay in the body of what should actually be there. And they can start manipulating that overlay, changing the way it looks and so on, and gradually getting rid of it. You can change things using a lot of hypnotherapists are aware of the control room of the mind. Again, you can increase or decrease anything that you need to do with cells or pain or anything you want to. A lot of people, particularly with cancer, look at it as a battle or a war situation. That has actually now been researched and decided that it's actually not useful. They've decided that has actually negative impacts. So that's not a way to go with it. So again, we look at it as things like an overlay or something that shouldn't be there. Healing white light, again, that's a common one that most hypnotherapists are aware of. And imagine sort of the bodily well-being. But if you're going to get them to imagine bodily well-being, particularly if you're going to do sort of forward rehearsal and things that we do using NLP, do be aware of any prognosis. Although we said look at the diagnosis, not the prognosis, be aware of it. You know, if somebody has been given 6 months to live, there's no point in getting them to imagine how well they're going to be in 2 years' time, because that's going to cause distress.
You know, if that's a true story that I heard regarding the Pac-Man theory, that a young boy had brain cancer and his doctor somehow used some techniques of the Pac-Man.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of anecdotal stories and anecdotal evidence, but scientific evidence is very scant in those areas, which, again, is why we have to be very mindful of the Cancer Act in the UK. I mean, I've heard lots of claims. It seems to be worse over in the States, because we've got the 1939 Cancer Act. But I've seen adverts over here with people saying, oh, I can cure cancer with hypnosis. You know, you need 4 sessions a week for 6 months, and, you know, and it will go, but there's no guarantee. And that's very, very worrying, because if you actually tell people to have complementary therapies, particularly in early stage cancer, it actually increases the chance of dying by up to 6 times compared to not going through the normal treatment route. So it's quite a dangerous thing to do. And I went to a conference a couple of years ago, and there was somebody there saying, oh, I work with cancer patients, and they said 15 years ago I worked with a patient with a particular type of cancer, did regression to cause with them, and the cancer went away. You know, they didn't say what other treatment they were having, but they said, oh, it went away, and we've just done it with somebody else, and that proves that it works. And I'm thinking, well, you know, two people in 15 years is not even enough to be a coincidence, let alone evidence that it's actually worked.
Well, Steve Jobs, are you familiar with yep. That he wishes he would have had more traditional treatment.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, I'm a great believer in having it as a complementary therapy, but not as an alternative therapy. That's a dangerous route to be going down. So that's sort of, if you like, the areas that we can use. And I use a lot of those and a lot of other things. So again, can we really alter the immune system, the power of the mind? So it's a bit early to say, but there's a growing body of evidence. We need more. We need much more, but we need empirically tested evidence, not anecdotal, which is the big problem we have. And unfortunately, therapists don't help us. You know, a lot of hypnotherapists and people in the industry don't really help the industry themselves, because they make stupid claims. I had one recently that I was online. Somebody was asking about some advice to do hypnotherapy with borderline personality disorder. Now, it's an area that a lot of people would say, well, it's an area that you shouldn't be involved in anyway. It is contraindicated in certain ways. I do a lot of borderline personality work, quite by accident, really. Is many years ago, when I was fairly new to hypnotherapy, I had a borderline personality patient, disorder patient contact me and said, oh, will you do some hypnotherapy with me? And I thought, perhaps I shouldn't. But I spoke to a doctor of psychology and he said, yeah, you get involved, but obviously we need to get the support of the GP and so on. And I went to the GP and said, look, one of your patients, borderline personality disorder, would like me to do some hypnotherapy with them. Are you happy with that? And the doctor was very dismissive and come back and said, yeah, you're unlikely to cause any harm, was the response that I got. So I did some work with this borderline personality disorder patient, and she wrote me a lovely letter saying how I'd completely transformed her life from existing to living. She'd been on holiday, she'd been out for meals, she'd got a job, and she'd done all sorts of other stuff and put it down to the hypnotherapy. She also copied the letter to her GP, who begrudgingly admitted that I'd made more difference in 5 sessions than everything they'd done in 15 years. And since then, she sent me a steady stream of borderline personality disorder patients. Where that goes, where we don't help ourselves. I saw somebody recently put up on social media saying, can you give me some advice on dealing with a borderline personality disorder? So I put some ideas back saying, well, this is sort of the approach that I look at. And then somebody popped up and said, oh, I cure borderline personality disorder in one session. You know, the usual thing. And I said, well, that's interesting. I said, first of all, we don't cure anything. We just help, facilitate, and so on. But I said, I'm really curious about how you do it. The first thing came back, said, oh, I see you're just a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm a curative hypnotherapist, whatever one of those is. And he said, so I cure things. So I said, okay, well, what's your approach? And he said, oh, it's pretty obvious. He said, borderline personality disorder. He said, it's caused by a genetic switch that's in the wrong place. So he said, so I'd hypnotize the patient and I get the unconscious to change the genetic switch so it's switched into the right place. So that cures the borderline personality disorder. And I said, that's brilliant. And I said, so what's your evidence for that? And he said, well, at the end of the session, the patient tells me they feel better. Brilliant, you know, great. So we're really going to get taken seriously in hospitals and doctors from that thing. So we don't want anecdotal evidence. We don't want wild claims because that's not going to get us more serious. But it is useful because people are becoming more predisposed now into believing and understanding the mind-body link, which is really good. So they're now becoming more and more open to holistic treatments rather than purely medical treatments, and that's where we come in. And with the emergence of more evidence, hypnotherapy, again, could be poised to be at the forefront going forward. So is PNI the next big thing in mind-body medicine? Time will tell. Who knows? I hope it is. So that's pretty much all I'm going to talk about. I'm open to questions. I did mention, obviously, cancer stuff, and I'll talk a lot more about that tomorrow. But I do online training, USB course training as well, mentoring. I have script book and USB stuff here. So they're all available for special prices at the conference. But other than that, thank you very much. And anybody with any questions? No, all stunned.
some food additives acting as excitotoxins in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Study diet of those types of foods with those types of additives have a long-term effect on our immune system?
I think that definitely. I think that, and again, that's why I think there's more sort of cancer incidents and things as now. There's two things. I mean, one in two people born since 1960 will actually encounter cancer anyway. It's 50% of the population. And I think a lot of that stuff is that things like, you know, the modern world. Okay, admittedly, people are living longer, which is why more people are prone to things like that. But I think it is a lot of environmental factors, you know, whether it's additives in food, you know, just in the air, just general lifestyle. I think, you know, we're doing a lot of stuff that we don't really understand, which I think has an impact going forward.
I heard recently that in Europe they've taken out the food dyes in children.
There are certain things in the UK that we don't do compared to out here.
It's like all those food dyes
and parents. One of the big things is they're talking about sort of meat importation from the States into the UK, and we do have some, but chicken, for example, we chlorinating for cleaning chicken is banned in Europe and the UK. And it is interesting, again, sort of cereals, for example. Somebody pointed out sort of a box of cereal from the US to the UK, and you look at the list of ingredients, in the UK there's about 4 or 5 ingredients, and you look at the US and there's a whole list of reconstituted things and added things and all sorts of stuff.
In Europe they use beet juice and grape and other natural things to color, because,
yeah.
You know, Cheerios. I mean, I needed to have all those sugar glue Cheerios with all these additives. So
there you go. But if there's no questions, enjoy your lunch and thank you very much.
Thank you. Tell us about your book.
Yep, that's there. That's $45. That's a hypno-oncology script book. It's all scripts to use with cancer patients. As I said, the book is included in PDF format with the training.